We must hide, quickly.
Why? What is it?
The Syrians. They're raiding our village. They've already entered the outskirts, and we have no time to flee. We'll have to try to hide here in our house.
Daddy, I'm afraid. What if they find us?
They'll probably take us captive and make slaves of us. Shh! We must be quiet.
Open up in there! Open up or I'll break the door down! All right, men! Bring the battering ram! What's the store in? Well, they must be hiding. I know someone's here. I saw him run in. Start searching, men. Here they are, hiding under the bed.
Uncle Dan, it sounds like your story is going to be an exciting one.
Oh, it is, Aunt Sue, and it's taken from Holy Scripture, the great book of human drama. If you would like to read the story as recorded in the Old Testament, turn to the book of 2 Kings, chapter 5. I call the story
Captive Maid.
Ben-Hadad, king of Syria, had defeated the armies of Israel in the battle which resulted in the death of the wicked king Ahab. Since that time, however, the Syrians had maintained against Israel a constant border warfare, so that even though there was comparative peace in the land, the people of Israel were continually troubled by the border raids. In one of the border villages was a God-fearing family who were faithful in training their daughter to love, trust, and obey the God of heaven. One day, as the father returned home from the village gathering place, he had many things to tell his family.
Hello there! And how's my family tonight? Smells like fresh barley loaves.
Yes, and supper's all ready as soon as you wash your hands.
All right.
Daddy, did Mother tell you what we did today?
No. Something special?
I think so. Mother taught me how to make barley loaves. We'll try them for supper.
Oh, well, do you think we'll be able to eat them?
Oh, Daddy, come on. Let's try them.
As the mother, father, and young daughter ate their supper, conversation naturally turned to the news of the day's activities.
Did you learn any news while you were at the city gate? I can tell by the look on your face that you have something you're anxious to tell.
Ah, my dear, you are observing. While sitting with the other men at the gate, I learned that one of the other border villages was raided again last night by the Syrians.
But I thought we were supposed to be at peace with Syria.
Well, we are. These marauders don't seem to be actually sent out by the king. They're just light-armed bands that come to plunder our goods and take captives before anyone can pursue them.
Why doesn't the Syrian king stop them? It seems if they keep up these raids, the Israelites might invade.
Well, the Syrian king knows better than that. The Israelite army is not strong enough right now to invade anybody. Besides, the marauders are making a fairly good business out of selling the captives as slaves.
If only more of the Israelites were true and faithful to the God of heaven, and our king a God-fearing king, we might not have this trouble. God would give us the strength to fight off the oppressors as he has done in the past.
True, true. But it may be that God has another plan in mind also. Think of the tremendous witness it would be for the God of heaven if all the Israelite captives would remain true to their faith while in the captivity of the Syrians.
That is something to think about. Oh, but I can't help wondering when our village will be next.
Yeah, there's no use worrying about it. The attacks are sudden and unexpected, and there's nothing we can do. But we must remember that if an attack does come, and we are taken captive by the Syrians, that our God in heaven will watch over us and care for us. We must never let our faith in God falter.
Mother, why don't you tell Daddy our news?
Oh, certainly. Our neighbor down the road came to visit today.
Oh, that's news. She comes every day or so, doesn't she?
It's what she told us that's news.
Oh, well, tell me about it.
Well, remember hearing about the man and woman of Shunem that built a room for Prophet Elijah to stay in?
Yes.
And then a baby boy was born to them a year later even though they'd given up hope of ever having children.
Yes, it was a miracle, they said.
Well, a few days ago, that little boy became very ill while out in the fields with his father, and a few hours later, he died.
Oh, how terrible.
But that's not the end of it. The mother hurried off to find Prophet Elisha, and he came to the house. He prayed unto the Lord and brought the boy back to life.
Brought him back to life? Oh, surely there must be some mistake. No one can raise people from the dead.
The boy was most certainly dead, and the prophet Elisha, through the power of God, brought him back to life.
Prophet Elisha certainly is a man of God. I don't see how anyone can doubt it after a miracle like that.
Isn't it wonderful to know that God is with those who trust in him?
Day by day, these God-fearing parents taught their daughter to trust and obey God in heaven. They told her the stories of Adam and Eve, Moses, Samuel, David, and others. They prayed with her and worshiped with her. They did not know the destiny that would be hers, but they were faithfully preparing her for whatever destiny might be. Then, one night, the dreaded Syrians did come to their village. The little girl and her family were captured by the marauders and taken back to Syria, where she was sold as a slave to Captain Naaman to be a maidservant for his wife. Now Captain Naaman was a commander of the host of the king of Syria and worshipped the gods of Syria. But the little maid, even though afraid, homesick, and lonely in a strange house with strange people, still prayed to the God of heaven.
Dear God in heaven, be with me here in this strange land. Help me to serve thee and witness for thee. Be with my mother and father, wherever they are. Help them not to worry about me.
Crying softly, she lay on her bed, thinking of the events that had brought her to this place. Then she heard her new mistress, Lady Naaman, quietly enter the room.
Little maid, I'd like to talk with you a few minutes.
Yes, mistress. I'll arise and dress.
No, you just stay on your bed. We can talk right here. I was passing by your room and I heard you crying. I thought maybe you were lonely. After all, you are rather young to be taken away from your parents and taken to a strange land.
Everything is so different.
Of course it is. But you will learn. Don't be afraid. Captain Naaman and I will be kind to you, and you'll be treated with consideration.
I'll do my best for you, mistress, and I'm sure I'll learn to like it here. My God will be with me and help me.
Your God? Who is your God?
I worship the God in heaven, who hears and answers my prayers. He is the creator of the universe.
Oh, I see. Well, you must tell me about your God sometime and about your home and country. But now I think it's time for you to get some rest. There'll be things for you to do tomorrow.
Yes, mistress. I think I can go to sleep now. I feel a lot better than I did before you stopped in.
Good night, little maid. Sleep well.
Good night.
Little maid learned easily and performed her duties faithfully. Through the kindness of Lady Naaman and the faithfulness of Little Maid, the two, mistress and maid, became good friends, often talking together like mother and daughter. Lady Naaman often invited her little maid to join in the family activities. One day...
Here's your lunch, mistress. Is there anything else I can get for you?
No, thank you. This is fine. Did you bring your lunch in here to eat with me, like I asked?
Yes, mistress.
Good. My lunch always seems to taste better when I have someone to eat with. Captain Naaman and I will be going to the altar of our God tonight to worship. Wouldn't you like to come with us? You're so far away from home and the temples of your God, but you can worship with us.
Thank you, mistress, but I cannot do that.
Why not? If you have work here to do, just leave it until tomorrow.
Oh, it's not that. You see, I worship only the God in heaven, the creator of the universe. He hears and answers my prayers. He cares for me. I can't pray to an image that can't see or hear.
I see. Very interesting.
The God in heaven will care for all those who trust and believe in him, just as he's cared for his faithful followers all through the years. When the children of Israel were captives in the land of Egypt, God delivered them. He chose Moses to be their leader. And when they got to the Red Sea, they had a problem. The Egyptian army was following them, and they had no way to get across the sea. But when Moses touched the water with his rod, God made the waters divide.
Faithfully, little maid witnessed to her mistress, often telling her the stories of how the God in heaven had cared for Israel in years gone by. But many times, little maid thought her mistress not happy, for there was a sad look on her face. Then one morning, as little maid carried the breakfast tray to her, Lady Naaman was crying.
Is it you, little maid?
Yes, mistress, I have your breakfast.
Come in.
Here you are, mistress. I put some fresh grapes on the tray this morning. I hope you like them. Why, mistress, you're crying. Is something wrong?
It's my husband. He has leprosy.
Leprosy? Captain Naaman has leprosy?
Yes, and there's no cure.
It must be just in the early stages.
Yes. Right now there are just some spots, but before long it'll eat away his fingers and toes and face, and finally he'll die.
Surely there's something.
There's nothing that can be done. It's just a matter of time.
Oh, mistress, if only my lord was with the prophet that is in Samaria. He would cure him of his leprosy.
Sweet child, what makes you say that? You know that no one can cure leprosy.
Prophet Elisha can. He has the power of God in heaven. Why, not long ago, he even raised a dead boy to life.
Oh, impossible.
It's true, mistress. The boy was quite dead, and Elisha brought him back to life. I'm sure he would heal Captain Naaman.
And when the words of the little maid were repeated to Captain Naaman, he was impressed, and he carried her testimony to Ben-Hadad, king of Syria.
That is what the maiden from the land of Israel said. According to her, this prophet Elisha can cure me of my horrible affliction.
Captain Naaman, as commander of my army, you have won many victories for Syria. You are a mighty man of valor. I highly respect your judgment. You have my permission to seek healing from the Israelite. Go now, and I will send a letter to the king of Israel in your behalf.
Thank you, your majesty. I will prepare for my journey. The blessing of the gods of Syria be upon you.
Having obtained permission from the king, Naaman went forth to seek healing, taking with him 10 talents of silver and 6,000 shekels of gold and 10 changes of festal garments. He also carried with him the letter from Ben-Hadad, king of Syria, to the king of Israel. The arrival of Naaman at the court of the Israelite king caused a great deal of excitement.
Your Majesty, something must be done about these border raids by the Syrians. Too many of our people are being taken captive.
Yes, yes, I agree. But what can we do? Our army is not strong enough to attack.
Long live the king, long live the king.
Yes, yes, what is it?
Naaman, captain of the army of the Syrian king, requests audience with your majesty Joram, king of Israel.
Captain Naaman from Syria? Whatever can he desire of me? We have done nothing against them.
He's brought a letter with him, your majesty, from the king of Syria.
Bring me the letter. That will perhaps give a little time for a conference with my advisers before granting audience.
I have the letter here, your majesty.
Greetings to Joram, king of Israel, from Ben-Hadad, king of Syria. When this letter reaches you, know that I have sent to you Naaman, my servant, that you may cure him of his leprosy.
Leprosy?
How can the king of Syria expect such a thing? I cannot cure leprosy. No one can. Send Naaman away. Send him away!
But, Your Majesty, he will be insulted if we just send him away.
Yes. Yes. We must think of something.
Your Majesty might be interested to know that Naaman has brought with him sizable gifts to pay for his cure. He has with him 10 talents of silver and 6,000 shekels of gold and 10 changes of festal garments. That would be a handsome sum to add to the royal treasury.
Perhaps we could find someone in the kingdom that could cure him, or at least pretend to cure him, and then we could keep all that money. No. No, it won't work. No one can cure leprosy. Send him away. Tell him I'm busy with other things. Something, just get rid of him.
But, Your Majesty, we hardly dare ignore the request of the king of Syria. They're giving us enough trouble already.
What does he think I am? Am I God?
Thinking only of himself and the predicament he was in, the idolatrous King Joram tore his clothes and cried,
"Am I God? To kill and to make alive, that this man sends word to me to cure a man of his leprosy. See how he seeketh a quarrel against me. If I don't heal this Naaman, the king of Syria will use it as an excuse to make war against us."
Soon the story of King Joram's predicament reached the prophet Elisha. Elisha could have left the idolatrous king to find his own way out. But seeing an opportunity to bring glory to God in a foreign land, he sent a message to the king.
"Wherefore hast thou rent thy clothes? Let him come now to me, and he shall know that there is a prophet in Israel."
So Naaman went with his horses and with his chariot to the house of Elisha, where the prophet sent a messenger out to instruct Naaman.
"Is that the prophet coming to me?"
"I don't know. We'll soon find out. Whoa! Whoa there!
Art thou Naaman, captain of the host of the king of Syria?"
"I am."
"The prophet Elisha sends you this message. Go and wash in the river Jordan 7 times, and thy flesh shall come again to thee, and thou shalt be clean."
"That's all the prophet said?"
"That is the message. I must now depart."
"It's an insult! An insult to me and to the king of Syria! Why, the prophet himself didn't even come out, but sent a lowly messenger. Outrageous!" "Well,
perhaps the prophet had other important duties to perform."
"And then he said to me, 'Wash in the Jordan, that filthy stream.' How can that heal anybody of anything, let alone leprosy?"
"Well, what did you expect, master?"
"Well, I don't know. I thought there would be some wonderful manifestation of power from heaven. I expected the prophet would come out to me and call on the name of the Lord his God and strike his hand over the place and recover the leper."
"And you are angry because the prophet did not do as you thought he would."
"But wash in the Jordan River. It's dirty. Are not Abana and Pharpar, rivers of Damascus, better than all the waters of Israel? May I not wash in them and be clean? Come, let's get away from here."
"Get up there. Move."
"That prophet is probably just planning a joke on me because I'm a foreign general. I'll show him a thing or two."
The proud spirit of Naaman rebelled against following the course outlined by Elisha. He was angry because no great fuss had been made over him. His national pride had been hurt by the command to wash in the dirty Jordan River rather than the beautiful rivers of Damascus. Naaman's servants, however, entreated him to carry out Elisha's directions.
"Master, I realize that the prophet's instructions are contrary to what you thought would happen, but..." "Master, if the prophet had asked you to do some great thing, wouldn't you have done it?"
"Well, I suppose so."
"Well, then why not obey when the prophet tells you to wash and be clean?"
"Who can wash and be clean in that filthy Jordan?"
"Well, if you don't obey the prophet, what chance have you of being healed?"
"None."
"Well, then why not obey?"
"All right. Turn the horses down towards the river."
The faith of Naaman was being tested, while pride struggled for the mastery. But faith conquered, and the haughty Syrian yielded his pride of heart and bowed in submission to the revealed will of Jehovah. Arriving at the Jordan, he got out of his chariot and waded in, while his servants watched to see what would happen. Then he dipped under the water. As he came up, all looked at the spots of leprosy. They were still there. A second time he dipped under. Still nothing happened. The third time, fourth, fifth, and sixth time, the horrible spots were still there. Breathless, the servants watched as Naaman once more dipped under the water.
Look! Look! They're gone! The spots are gone!
The leprosy is gone! Yes. You're healed! Master, you're healed! Whoa! Whoa there!
Thou art Elisha, prophet of the living God?
I am.
I heard of God through the testimony the Hebrew made in our household. But now I know that there is no God in all the earth but in Israel. For there I have been healed of my affliction. So now accept a gift from me, your servant. In gratitude I bestow upon you the 10 talents of silver, the 6,000 shekels of gold, and the 10 changes of festal garments that I have brought with me.
But Elisha could not accept payment for something that God, not he, had done. He wanted to show this mighty Syrian that the God of Israel was free to all nations, without money and without price.
As the Lord lives whom I serve, I will receive none. Go in peace.
And despite Naaman's urging, Elisha steadfastly refused any payment. Instead, he encouraged the Syrian to worship the true God, the God of creation. But Gehazi, Elisha's servant, was dismayed at his master's refusal.
Well, if that doesn't beat all, here we are desperately poor, barely supported by our own countrymen, and he refuses even a portion of Naaman's offer. He completely spared him. If there ever was anyone who could afford to pay for my master's services, it was this Syrian Naaman. As the Lord lives, I'll run after him and get something from him.
Master, why is it the prophet would accept no payment? It certainly would be customary to require payment, but he would accept nothing.
I know. It is hard to understand. Perhaps the God he serves is truly different from any other.
Master, look! Someone is running after us. Is it not Elisha's servant?
Yes, I believe it is. Stop the chariot so I can get out.
Whoa! Whoa there!
Is all well?
Oh, all is well. My master sent me to say there have just now come to me from the hill country of Ephraim 2 young men of the sons of the prophets. Pray give them 1 talent of silver and 2 festal garments.
Why, gladly. In fact, why not take 2 talents of silver?
Well, I don't know.
It's my pleasure. Here. And the garments. Let me get them for you. In fact, I'll send 2 of my servants to help you carry the load.
Oh, that would not be necessary, sir.
Oh, think nothing of it. Gladly will I do this, and more.
But as they approached the city gate, Gehazi stopped and said,
"This is far enough. I can take it from here. Please return to Captain Naaman."
And Gehazi took the silver and the garments and hid them near the wall of the city. Then Gehazi went in before Elisha.
Where have you been, Gehazi?
Me? Oh, your servant went nowhere.
Gehazi, did I not go with you in spirit when the man turned from his chariot to meet you?
What?
Was it a time to accept money and garments?
But we are so poor.
Did not my example show thee that there was a noble reason in refusing the Syrian's gifts? And in showing him that the servants of Jehovah do his bidding with no thought of monetary reward. Therefore, the leprosy of Naaman shall cleave to you and to your descendants forever.
So Gehazi went out from Elisha's presence a leper, as white as snow. But what of Naaman, the captain of the Syrian army, who had been healed of his leprosy by Elisha's God? Would he now return to his heathen gods of wood and stone? Oh, no. You see, Captain Naaman was not only healed in body, but converted in spirit. So changed, so thankful, and so happy was he, that upon returning to his home, he erected an altar, a place of worship to the living God. but perhaps even more thankful and happier than even Captain Naaman was the little maid whose faith in the God of heaven had made her master well again.